Johnny Bench, and I'm here with the only three players who have been on my baseball bunch team for all 5 years. Sam, Michelle, and Louie. Bunch, there's somebody else who's supposed to be here.
Who's that, Johnny?
What are we going to learn about now?
Correct, fielding. And besides the lessons you get from our three major league guest stars, the bunch will show you some drills that you can practice at home to sharpen your fielding. You'll also see a compact review of all the lessons and drills that you can refer to again and again. Bunch, I know you're familiar with our three major league guest stars. So, Kool-Aid Man, who we got in the field?
At shortstop, we have Ozzie Smith, teaching us the fundamentals of fielding a ground ball. At third base is Greg Nettles with lessons on proper positioning and working with your teammates. And at catcher, there's Gary Carter instructing us on catching plays and the catcher's role as field leader.
Okay, so get down. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Cutie.
Where were you going? Who were you going with?
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Left My Wallet. I'm Antonio the Promise Thomas, also known as Thomas Santel, and I want to thank you for tuning in today for a conversation about baseball with Eno Saris. Now wait a second. You're probably like, who the hell is Eno Saris? This is a wrestling website. This is a MMA website, and I've never heard of this guy with the strange first name. Well, this is a sports show. I'm a wrestler. I love baseball. I love fantasy baseball. And Eno is one of the, if not the, top fantasy baseball analysts anywhere in the world today. He's also one of the best pure baseball analysts anywhere. He writes for The Athletic. He has a numerous podcast. And I know we got a lot of people here at the site, a lot of people that listen to this show that are huge baseball fans. I'm a huge baseball fan. In fact, I got one of my drafts tonight, and I'm excited to bring this episode to you. I always try to bring you something different, and I think you're going to enjoy this talk. Now, you don't have to like baseball to enjoy this conversation with Eno, because I make the comparison of hardcore baseball fans to hardcore wrestling fans. They get super analytical. They get super deep and immerse themselves in baseball, in wrestling. They use all sorts of statistical data, whether it be spin rate on a fastball or quarter hour demographics for a rating. So they're very similar, and being a baseball fan my whole life, being a professional wrestler, I can relate these two. So you're going to enjoy this conversation that I had with Eno. It was a pleasure to have him. We see he had to cut it short at 30 minutes, so we had a nice, quick, fun 30-minute conversation, and we're going to get into that. But first, before you listen to Eno, well, actually, before you listen to him, I want to just tell you where you can reach me on Twitter at Promise Thomas or at Retro Grappler for Thomas Santel, my alter ego. And also, if you're listening to this, I want you to go to the board, find the Left My Wallet Eno Saris thread on the board under radio shows. I want you to leave a comment. I want you to let me know what you think, how you like this show, what you thought of Eno as a different guest, as a kind of a non-wrestling guest. And give me your feedback on Twitter or on the board. Let me know what you think. Now, I was supposed to have Josh Nason on this episode with me. Josh, a fellow New Englander, is a huge baseball fan. We're both Red Sox fans. Josh couldn't make it, but he is a huge, huge advocate and fan of Eno Saris and a lot of the Athletic baseball content. Now, I want you to clean out your ears here, and I want you to listen to Eno, because one day I was listening to him, and I was like, this guy sounds exactly like somebody. The voice was familiar, and I was like, who the hell does this guy sound like? And then all of a sudden, it dawned on me, he sounds exactly like Josh Barnett. Yes, Bloodsport's own Josh Barnett, UFC legend Josh Barnett. I'm going to say that. Take a listen. Try to imagine this is Josh Barnett talking about baseball. Maybe I'm crazy. Josh, I texted Josh right away. He's like, holy shit, are you correct? I couldn't think of who he sounded like, but you're right. Maybe I'm nuts. We know I'm nuts anyway, but take a listen to this. This is Eno Saris. He sounds just like Josh Barnett. Enjoy.
Make Swiss cheese and jelly sandwiches with my with this Polish guy that took care of me, and
I'm Polish too. Very
yeah,
cool.
We'd watch wrestling down in Florida where I live in Florida. So it's been a long time since, but it was a fond memory for me.
Peanut butter and jelly and Swiss cheese. Wow. Do you still eat those, or what was the?
Well, it has informed. I'm known for kind of doing sandwiches, and one of the things I definitely do is like I definitely incorporate jelly and cheese into a lot of my sandwiches. So. He did influence me.
Have you ever had because I love any kind of peanut butter and jelly combination. Have you ever done anything with peanut butter and cheese, like grilled cheese with peanut butter?
I've done the bananas. Yeah. And I was about to maybe try the pickles, but I haven't done it with cheese.
My wife is pregnant. She might like the pickled one. So, hey, so listening. You know, listening to you and Derek Van Riper on The Athletic on Rates and Barrels, you had mentioned you have lost count of how many leagues you are in. You say you're in about 100 of them, but I got to ask you, how many leagues are you in? Do you even know?
One, two, three. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think about 15.
Okay. All right. And you said that you have Ketel Marte in 95% of those leagues. Who else, intentionally or by chance, are you finding on many of those 15 teams?
Well, I was a big fan of Jose Urquidy. He's a pitcher for the Astros. And, you know, I do stuff on, like, you know, a pitcher's stuff and his command. And I have separate numbers for each of those. And he just scored through the roof on both of those. And I know that last year he didn't strike out a lot of guys, but I think the strikeouts are coming. I think he's going to have a big year. I love how thick he is, how big his thighs are. I think he's going to be able to handle the load in a year when a lot of people won't have the innings. There's going to be a lot of injuries this year. There's going to be a lot of playing around with innings. So Urquidy is somebody I get in the middle a lot. At the end of the drafts, I like this guy JT Brubaker on the Pirates and
sure,
Alec Mills on Chicago, just because I like command guys to some extent. AJ Pollock on the Dodgers keeps falling because he's old, but I think with the way the Dodgers are set up, when he's healthy, he's always going to play. I think they're platooning in other spots, and Pollock is the guy who's going to play a lot.
I got him last year for $4 in my NL only league, and that was the shortened season was the 1 year where he finally stayed healthy. I think with guys like that, and you can tell me if I'm maybe off track here. I think guys like Pollock, Jose Quintana, even a John Lester guy, you know, the older guys who may be boring and aren't flashy picks, those boring guys win leagues and give you kind of a sense of stability to go out and maybe take a flyer on a Brubaker or a Urquidy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. Some of those guys have been falling and maybe they are not going to be handled with as many kid gloves this year when it comes to what the teams will do with their innings. So, you know, a guy like J.A. Happ for the Twins, he might get injured, sure. But when he's not injured, they're going to play him. They're not going to say, oh, we got to back him off. And, he's not a young guy anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's a sort of a class of boring old guys. Even though Brad Keller's not that old in Kansas City, I think he almost gets that treatment. Kyle Hendricks, I've had a few shares of.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the kind of crazy strikeout numbers or the crazy stuff, but he just keeps doing it. And as we uncover more things about the physics of the way that the ball moves, we sort of have come to a realization that Kyle Hendricks does a lot of things that make him good other than velocity.
Yeah.
So I found him. You know, a big bounce back candidate for me that I found is Josh Bell. He's moving from a real pitcher's park to a hitter's park when he goes from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. And then on top of that, some of the underlying StatCast numbers, like his maximum exit velocity, some of that stuff, still look fine, you know? And
yeah.
I think some of these players at the top, you know, Christian Yelich and Cody Bellinger, some of those players would have, I think if you just given them another 2 months, they would have had one of those MVP-like stretches.
They'd figure it out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where they would have just knocked the crap out of the ball, and their numbers would have been looked fine at the end of the season. So I definitely have a fair amount of bounce backs. Ketel Marte, like you mentioned,
yeah,
hit the ball really hard, just didn't have really great results. So
yeah,
that's why I have him everywhere.
Yeah, he was a guy I had in my NL only last year as well. I think he only hit 2 home runs coming off that. He had 28 or 30 in 2019. And I mean, I'm not putting much stock. I'm putting a little stock into the 60-game season last year, but I think, I think maybe a combination of last year and 2019 is more accurate for hitters. But for pitchers, a lot's been talked about with innings being a problem, getting to innings minimums. Experts and fantasy guys everywhere. I know Lenny Melnick is a guy that I friend of mine that I listen to every day. He's big on getting the innings. You mentioned Kyle Hendricks, John Lester. I want to get into innings here a little, but who are a couple guys that, you know, maybe not exciting, they aren't Jacob deGrom, they aren't Gerrit Cole, but that will help you solidify that 800 or 1,000 innings minimum that most leagues need?
Yeah, I think Jose Berrios on the Twins is a good example of that. He's done the innings before, and he can do them again. He's not too young. They'll let him go. And he has a high floor, and he just doesn't seem to be that exciting to people in drafts. So Berrios is a guy that comes to mind. Dallas Keuchel is a guy that ranked fairly high. I think the projections are off on him a little bit too, because he's such a control meister that I think he is better than his projections. I guess you could say Patrick Corbin is like that. I'm a little bit worried about him as more of a two-pitch pitcher though.
Okay.
But Mike Minor in Kansas City is getting a velocity boost this spring and has actually been throwing harder than he threw last year. And when he throws hard, he has a really good mix.
Yeah, you talked about him on today's show. We're recording this on Thursday, the 25th. And you talked about Mike Minor as a guy pitching in, Kansas City is getting overlooked, but they have a lot of really, I think, really interesting fantasy assets on offense. And then Minor pitching in a pitcher's park. You know, that's a guy, veteran guy, 170 innings if he stays healthy, 180.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Now I have a question here. I have an AL only league, and there's no innings minimum. I always thought there was. I always thought there was an 800 innings minimum. But in a league like that, I also have a dynasty league that doesn't have an innings minimum. It's a points league. In a league like that, and I don't know if you have any, how are you building a staff? Are you maybe veering to some of the more high-end closers to base your staff around, seeing you don't have an innings limit? Or, you know, it's kind of got to think on the fly here on you know, if you don't have any leagues like that, but no innings limits, how would you go about building a pitching staff?
Well, it's a little bit harder, I think, that points league that you're talking about with no innings, because you're just accumulating points. And so if you did go the reliever strategy, you'd have to kind of do an analysis of, like, how many points can I get out of these limited innings? Because you'll get so many more innings from starters. Hmm. So you'd have to actually look at how many points the top starters gave you as how many points the top relievers gave you in the past. Okay. Before you kind of went down that road. But in general, if you don't have an innings limit, I think that, yeah, punting wins. Wins are a very difficult stat. And
unpredictable. Them, unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and you know, there's something happening at the bottom of the reliever ranks this year where a lot of times I would have said, oh, yeah, just take you know, take one good closer and then just group a bunch of, have a quantity at the bottom and find your closer. Except the problem is the bottom has gotten so big this year in terms of closing, where there's just so many situations where nobody knows who the closer is, or is it a committee, or they're just going to figure it out, or some guy's injured and he's going to come back. And so I think that a reliever strategy can work, but you really have to hit the top. And make relievers scarce for everybody else. And so do something like double tap Aroldis Chapman and Josh Hader.
Mm. Liam Hendricks. Yeah.
Try to get two or three in quick succession if it's a snake draft or in the auction. You know, just buy them really quickly before people realize what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then once you have two, you have this foundation that nobody else will have. Because I think there's probably 6 or 7 relievers that I like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you have,
nobody else is going to have two. You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you have Hader and you have Hendricks, Chapman usually is around 50 innings, but if you have Hader and Hendricks, that's going to be, what would you say they're going to get for innings combined? 150 this year?
They could.
That's an elite. I mean, that's 150 innings of a Jacob deGrom, or, you know, a high-end top pitcher, but you're getting the save as well.
Yeah, in a year where I doubt more than one player, maybe two players have a 200 innings.
Yeah.
So I think that the average starting pitcher that's rostered in fantasy will probably have more like 165 innings. So if you got 120, 125 innings of those guys together, that would be like almost getting Jake DeGrom in the first, you know?
Yeah. No.
And so, yeah, I think it's a viable strategy, and you don't have those innings. So then what I would do beyond that is do kind of maybe a streaming thing with the starting pitchers, but just be really careful, or just get guys that are going to be relievers that are going to be really good no matter what their role is.
Yeah.
And just accumulate some points with relievers that way. I mean, it also matters what kind of slots you have.
Yeah.
If you have to have somebody that's starting pitcher eligible. But every year there are starting pitchers that end up in the bullpen. You know, somebody like Julian Merriweather on the
Toronto
Blue Jays.
Toronto, yeah.
Yeah, yep. He'll get like 100 innings this year. They're going to be great innings. He won't get a lot of wins or saves, probably. But if you're in your point system or in this system where you're going a lot of reliever heavy, he won't give up a big ERA.
Yeah. Maybe a guy like Michael Kopech too, who's prospect pedigree, starting off in Chicago's bullpen, maybe worked up, Tampa Bay too. I got to think those guys, you know, Josh Fleming, Peter Fairbanks, those guys, they're going to be in the mix for saves too. So that's kind of an interesting situation there. You do so much with pitching. Your analysis and the stats you come up with are second to none. And I want to get to the article you had on The Athletic that came out today on command improving with age. But I want to touch on a guy that a lot of people have been talking about this spring. It's TJ Anton. He's injured now, and it looks like he's going to be okay come opening day. But you had mentioned that he has the biggest increase in spin rate this year, which is why you are buying a lot of TJ Anton stock. Who are some other pitchers in the past that have improved spin rate and been hidden gems? Like, this seems like it's going to be an accurate stat.
It's a complicated one because right now, you know, the most proven way to improve your spin rate is to use pine tar.
Okay. All right.
Put pine tar on your fingers and use a substance that's against the rules. And baseball just came out with a edict that they're going to check balls in play.
Yeah,
they're going to test balls. They're going to watch, you know, the pitchers. They're going to try and crack down on this.
Not good for Craig Kimbrell too.
No, I mean, Craig Kimbrell's got that brown hat going. And then Trevor Bauer, you know, he's had this whole thing where he kind of was telling everybody, hey, everyone's using pine tar. Like, there's this cheating going on under your nose. Then it seems apparent that he kind of just joined in once the baseball wasn't able to kind of crack down on it. Now is he going to be targeted by this new thing? I tend to think that not that many players will get in trouble, and that this will be very hard to do, because one of the substances that people use is bullfrog sunscreen, and they just put it together with the rosin, and that gives them a grip on the ball that improves the spin rate and improves their command of the ball, but also improves the movement of the ball. Oh. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to say there's sunscreen on this ball?
Yeah. That could be that could be regular sunscreen.
Right. And, okay. And you're not going to go up to a guy who has sunscreen on and be like, you can't have sunscreen on. So there's a lot that's really difficult about this. Also, if they find pine tar on the ball, you know, it's going to be hard to kind of prove where that ball came from. I mean, you'd have to get a specific ball that didn't touch the catcher, because the catcher has pine tar over him.
Yeah.
Didn't touch the ground a bunch. Didn't touch a fielder, because fielders have pine tar on them sometimes. So I think it's been very difficult for baseball. On the other hand, you know, baseball is trying to get more balls in play, trying to get fewer strikeouts, and trying to change the game. This could be a way to do that, because these substances really do improve pitches.
Yeah.
Anton's pitches are better now that he has more spin on them.
Could that be the new ball too? Isn't there a new threading or
change in the ball? Yeah, they're thinking about doing like a tacky ball. The problem is if that ball doesn't fly as far and they deaden it and all of a sudden the homers all disappear, baseball could be pretty weird. It could be all strikeouts and no homers, and I don't think anybody wants that. So they're in a sticky spot right now. They're trying to figure out how to kind of enforce this better, how to maybe scare some pitchers straight, nothing really obvious strikes out to me as like an easy way for them to fix this.
Okay. So we talked about spin. We talked a lot of pitching on here. But what is your go-to stat, whether it be exit velocity, barrel rate for hitters and predicting hitter success going into a season?
If it's a young player who has a very small sample and I haven't seen much of them, max exit velocity is very important.
Okay.
Because if they can hit the ball 120 miles an hour, like for that example, there's only one guy who does that. That's Giancarlo Stanton. So what we've seen in the past is anybody who can hit the ball harder than 110 you have to take notice. Those guys have real power. And so you kind of, if a guy jumps up, let's see here, Chris Gittens is a guy that doesn't have much prospect pedigree, but he's a first baseman for the Tigers. He could just get his chance soon. He's hit a ball 119 wow. this spring. Josh Mears is a guy who's in the prospect system for the Padres. He could get traded out of there if they need help in the season. He hit a ball 117. CJ Krohn, who's coming back from injury, hit a ball 116, and I think that just says, oh, he's healthy.
Yeah.
But Riley Green, Brendan Rodgers, who's unfortunately hurt, but second baseman for the Rockies, when he comes back, he hit a ball 116 this spring.
Riley Green, I've seen him in a couple spring training games for the Tigers. I like him. I think he just he carries himself like a superstar. He's I don't know. There's something about him. I've seen a couple. He carries himself kind of like Jared Kelnick, who obviously is with Franco as the top prospect. But yeah, Riley Green was someone that stood out to me. But obviously not for this year, but you know, deep prospect guys. I wanted to ask you quickly, given the Eloy Jimenez injury, torn pectoral muscle, out probably for the year. Given that injury, should players and organizations be treating spring training differently? We saw Zach Gallen get injured, hairline fracture, I think in his elbow, taking batting practice as a pitcher. Should we be, you know, maybe treating this like NFL preseason where, you know, guys maybe aren't playing every day?
Yeah, I mean, they do like take off. You know, after six innings, the veterans do get perks and get to leave games early. So they do try to make it less than the regular season. Do try to get them, you know, more. There's been some effort to kind of come into camp a little bit later, get them a little more sleep, and just different ways to make it easier on them. But the one thing that I think we really need to do to make this easier on everybody is shorten spring training.
Mm.
The players don't get paid for spring training.
Yeah.
And batters tell me they need about 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks to get their timing. Anything beyond that, you're just risking injury. You know, I've had some pushback from people saying pitchers, if you ask them to stretch out on their own, pitchers need the 6 weeks to stretch out from, you know, off-season pitching to pitching five innings. But we, you know, teams ask a lot of their pitchers in the off-season anyway. I think if they actually ask them to come to camp able to pitch three innings, that wouldn't be that much of an ask. And now you could have like a 3 week or a 3.5 week spring training, where you're just not, there's not going to be as many opportunities for people to get hurt. You know, there's just not going to be as many chances.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a good idea.
All right. On The Athletic today, you have an article, does a pitcher's command improve with age? And some, you can go to listeners here at the Wrestling Observer, can go to theathletic.com. Great baseball content, great content all around there. Very interesting article, though, with some great stats showing how command improves with age. And for people listening here, for their, you know, maybe I got two fantasy drafts coming up this weekend. Who are some pitchers? We mentioned a couple of pitchers earlier, older guys, John Lester, maybe Kyle Hendricks. Who are a couple other guys maybe that would fall under this improved command over age that people maybe should take a chance on in drafts?
Yeah, it doesn't improve that much, but guys who have sort of borderline command but great stuff and are young that could just improve a little bit that stick out to me are Christian Javier on the Astros. He had borderline reliever command, but it wasn't as bad as someone like Dylan Cease.
Yeah.
Or even Nate Pearson, who are exciting young pitchers that throw the ball 100 miles an hour and have a lot of stuff, but also spray the ball all over the place and may not be starters long term. Okay. You know, they, for example, I have this thing called Command Plus You know, those guys are at 83 and 81, Cease and Pierce. Javier's at 89. So just a little bit of improvement there, and he'll get into sort of backhand starter when it comes for command. Who's another young guy that could benefit from improving command? I'd say somebody like, who's going to come up here? There's also an interesting effect where a coaching staff can help a person with bad command just make the most of their command. So Tyler Glasnow, for example, his command isn't very good, but his stuff is good, and his team has just asked him basically to throw down the middle, either high down the middle or low down the middle, and just worry on that. And that's
interesting.
That's really improved his walk rate. It hasn't improved his underlying command, but it's improved his walk rate. And so I think somebody like Luis Patino, who is a young pitcher that they traded for, has the same problem as Glasnow, and virtually the same command, actually exactly the same command plus. I could see them just saying the same thing to Patino. We're going to simplify it. We're going to maybe make you a 2.5-pitch pitcher instead of trying to be a 4-pitch pitcher, whatever it is. We're going to tell you mostly to throw it down the middle, maybe high, maybe low, and that's it.
Wow, interesting.
So, and then another guy who's had a great spring, and I think it's all sort of coming together from his Logan Webb for the Giants. He's got a great home park, even though they made some changes to that park. He's still got a great home park for a pitcher. He's going to have some good games in division. The best thing for me is if I could put Logan Webb on my bench and put him somewhere where, you know, I don't have to pitch him in Colorado or something.
Yeah. Hey, as we wrap things up here, I'm watching the on the TV in the background. I have the NBA trade deadline special, and I see Richard Jefferson pop up as one of the the panelists. You have a history with Richard Jefferson dating back to your college days, correct?
Yeah, it'd be funny, actually. I think I have interacted with him a couple times on Twitter to see if he remembered. But I was a 5-year sixth man. Sixth man is what they called the Cameron Crazies at Stanford. I would sleep out sometimes for big games. I would. I don't think I missed a basketball game the years I was there. And we saw great players come through. Jason Terry was on Arizona. Mike Bibby back then. I saw the Collins twins. The Lopez twins at the very end. So I got to see a lot of really great basketball, but there was something that got me about, you know what had happened was I heckled. I have to admit it now as an adult. I would not be very proud of myself back then. But I heckled players, and one time Richard Jefferson was on the bench because he was hurt, and I was heckling, and he turned around and looked at me, and he's like, "What'd you say?" And we had this whole interaction where I was like, "Get back on the bench, you're always hurt," and some back and forth where he's, and then they started winning, and he's waving his towel and pointing at me, it was pretty funny. They kind of, honestly, if I don't remember the exact record, but I think if we went back, we would see that they owned us.
Arizona
was really good back then. So he probably got the last laugh, but it was a lot of fun. And maybe someday I'll shake his hand and apologize for some of the things I said.
beg for forgiveness. You have to kind of segue into your plugs and where listeners here at The Observer can read and listen to you. You teamed up with a brewery on your own beer called Ephes. Tell us a little about the beer, where listeners can find it, what brewery, and how to get it.
Yeah, it's really fun. I used to run a website called October, which was a beer magazine for, and I think they're just closing up shop now, but there was a beer magazine for Condé Nast. And one of my writers there ended up at a brewery, and he called me. He was like, "Hey, you want to collaborate?" And so we just you know, had a little back and forth about what I wanted out of the beer. And I wanted a crusher because spring is coming and summer is coming. And hopefully this will be a summer of renewal for everybody. Where we get back out there and get, you know, back on the scene and get to party again with everybody. And so I just wanted a beer that you could have a lot of in the sun, at the park, in the seats. And so hopefully we'll get it into the White Sox park there at some point. But that requires some of you Chicago listeners to go out there and buy it. It's at Old Irving Brewery. They're famous for their Old Irving Brewery is famous for their beer called Beezer. Beezer is their hazy IPA. And so this one is almost like going to be, you could almost consider it a half Beezer, where it's going to be like a 5% hazy pale ale. And it's called IFA. So if that sells out, then they'll do it again. If people like it, they'll do it again. And that's going to be at Old Irving Brewery in Chicago. So hopefully you have some Chicago listeners out there.
We do. Chicago. Go get it. If you like Beezer, you're going to love Ephes. Eno, thank you so much for joining us today. Where can listeners and readers here at The Observer listen to you and read your baseball expertise?
Yeah, so fun and free is at Eno Saris on Twitter. I've been doing some more Instagram kind of overlays where I show some picture stuff on same thing, Eno Saris at Instagram. You can listen to our podcast, Rates and Barrels, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. That's also free. You can find it on YouTube even. And then if you like what you see, sign up off of one of my articles, like today's article about, you know, does command improve with age? If you sign up for The Athletic off of that, it's $1 a month for a year. And I'll get credit if you do it off of my name. So, you know, I think The Athletic is really great. I've been working with Ken Rosenthal and Jason Stark and all these great local writers.
The Whiz Kids had won it. Bobby Thompson had done it. And Yogi read the comics all the while. Rock and roll was being born, marijuana we would scorn. So down on the corner, the national pastime went on trial. We're talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller. The scooter, the barber, and the nuke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque. Especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Well, Casey was winning, Hank Aaron was beginning. One Robbie going out, one coming in. Kiner and Mitchett Goodell, the Thumper and Mel Parnell. And Ike was the only one winning down in Washington. I'm talking baseball, Klazuski, Campanella. Talking baseball, the man and Bobby Feller. The scooter, the barber, and the Duke. They knew them all from Boston to Dubuque. Especially Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Well, he swore he was the Oklahoma kid. And Cookie played hooky to go and see the Duke. And me, I always loved Willie Mae. Those were the days. Well, now it's the 80s, and Brett is the greatest. And Bobby Bonds can play for everyone. Rose is at the vet, Rusty again is a Met, and the great Alexander is pitching again in Washington. I'm talking baseball, like Reggie, Quisenberry. Talking baseball, Carew and Gaylord Perry, Seaver, Garvey, Schmidt, and Vida Blue. If Cooperstown is calling, it's no fluke. They'll be with Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. Mickey and the Duke.
Say hey, say hey, say hey.
Yeah.
and Willie, Mickey and the Duke.
Say